The next case is Carlson in San Juan County.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Nicholas Power, and along with Stephanie O'Day, we represent the appellants in this matter. And I have 3 points I would like to...
Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Sorry, I would. I would like to reserve 2 minutes. I have 3 points I would like to make. The first of which is that the unequal-sized residency districts are in conflict with Washington's constitutional requirements of Article 1, Section 19. The second is Article 2, Section 19, the single subject or subject and title rule, is in conflict with the ballot titles, which were described in the voter's pamphlet. And the third is that the propositions voted for in the November 2012 election were violative of San Juan County's own Section 8.31 of San Juan County's charter. And I'd like to start with the Section 8.31 argument, because I think this case can be disposed of on that issue alone without even reaching the constitutional subjects. 8.31 states, if more than one amendment is submitted to on the same ballot, they shall be submitted in such a manner that the people may vote for or against the amendment separately, provided an amendment which embraces a single or interrelated subject may be submitted as a single proposition, even though it is composed of changes to more than one articles. So the first sentence, we had three propositions.
Well, I think you also have to address the proviso, too, in your argument. But go ahead.
I will. In the voter's pamphlet, the fine print behind the ballot titles, which describe the changes that were sought, the underline and strike through characters.
That's the complete text, is what you're referring to.
Right. The complete text is the same changes were contemplated in sections 8.20, 8.21, and 8.31 in all three propositions. So if I'm a voter and I go and I vote, right, and I vote for Proposition 1 and against Proposition 2, I voted for 8.20, the changes contemplated in 8.20, 8.21, and 8.31, and I have voted against them. So it is that act which violates 8.31. You'll note that 8.31 is one of the sections that is actually being changed by the propositions. And interestingly, as a footnote to this argument, some sections had different changes in the same sections, and I'll draw your attention to 4.34, which had three different versions. So we have the passage, the apparent passage of
this
three propositions.
4.34 is the legislative body districting committee, right?
Right. And if you look at the materials supplied, strike through the full text of Proposition 1 and Proposition 2 and Proposition 3, the changes in 4.34 were different in each of those propositions. So now we have the question,
But the amendment was the same, isn't it? The boundaries of the residential districts may be altered, et cetera. So that's not a strike through. That's the actual amendment.
Right, but if you see that additional language in 4.34 for Proposition 1,
right,
if you go to the ballot in 4.34 in Proposition 2, it doesn't have that additional language, but it has other modifications. Okay, so if I voted, and not if I voted. We apparently passed all three propositions, which 4.34 is now a part of the charter. And that is, this is the argument which completely is divorced from the constitutional arguments, and it just arises under San Juan County's
right.
charter.
Right.
So moving on in my limited time, the second issue I'd like
But how are these not interrelated?
Well,
I mean, the proviso said that you can embrace interrelated subjects. So how are these three propositions not interrelated?
Well, I think that they are not interrelated, and this goes to the subject and title rule, is that these the 8.30, 8.21, and 8.20 have to deal with how the Charter Review Committee is formulated, whereas the thrust of Proposition 1 and 2 have to do with the constitution of the county council. These are two completely different political animals. You know, the county council and then the Charter Review Committee, which makes the organic or suggests the organic law of the county. So, you know, that alone, I think we can, is a non-constitutional basis for invalidating the propositions. Moving on to the Article 2, Section 19, and this is the, it sort of ties in with what I was just saying about how the 8.20 revisions, 8.21, were dealing with the CRC, is that the ballot titles did not give warning to the voters that such amendments were contemplated in the actual text of the propositions.
Can we move, since your time is short, to your first argument about the Constitution and your taking the position that Proposition 1 is unconstitutional?
Yeah. I mean, here
does that relate to your position that the two statutes that authorize voter residency districts 36, 32, 020, 040 are unconstitutional?
It does, and I think that you know, we will concede that there's the federal trilogy of cases that are referenced in the brief that say that residency districts are okay. But if you go and you look at what actually happened during the election, and you will see that in these counties, which make up the vast bulk of the voters, almost 8,000 voters, Proposition 1 would have failed. It was only because of the landslide in...
You're not being picked up on the...
It was only because of the landslide in Lopez, which is in the lower right-hand corner, which only has fewer than 2,000 votes, that voted 80% to 20% to pass Proposition 1. Did that put the Prop 1 over the finish line? If you extrapolate the votes from the rest of the county, Prop 1 would have failed. It was just the benefited district that, you know, had this huge landslide.
I don't understand what you just said. The problem is that everybody had one vote and they were equally counted in determining whether to make this change?
No, the problem is that the non-benefited districts of San Juan Island and Orcas, had we extrapolated that vote throughout the county...
So there should have been weighted voting?
No, I see I'm out of time. Can I bring that up in my rebuttal?
Yes.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Randy Gaylord, San Juan County Prosecuting Attorney for San Juan County. Also with me at council table is Mr. Jeff Even for the State of Washington. I'll be conducting the argument. The majority of voters approved Proposition 1, which returned San Juan County to a method of election in which three council members are elected by all voters in the county at the primary election and also at the general election. This method of election is based upon a trio of United States Supreme
Well, I think
Court decisions.
They've conceded that. And so I think the two arguments to address are, number one, challenge to RCW 36, 3202, and 040. And number two, the specific language that San Juan Charter has, which is 8.31.
Sure.
And why 8.31 was not violated. Perhaps you could start with 8.31.
Yes, I'd like to do that. The procedure used by the county is based upon a procedure set forth by both the Constitution as well as the Charter. And the Constitution provides for a Charter Review Commission to make proposals to the voters, and it does so and includes language that suggests that states that if more than one amendment is submitted on the same ballot, they shall be submitted in such a manner that the people may vote for or against the amendment separately. That's in Article 11, Section 4. San Juan County's charter includes also this proviso that was mentioned that says, provided an amendment which embraces a single or interrelated subject may be submitted as a single proposition, even though it is composed of changes to one or more articles. So it suggests that you can have, and in fact, changes to not only different articles, and the test is whether or not they're all interrelated. And remembering that the this is known as the separate amendment rule, and it's different from Article 2, Section 19, the one subject, one vote rule. And the jurisprudence that follows the separate amendment rule is the jurisprudence that follows from state constitutional amendments, such as Article 23, Section 1, and so on, not Article 2, Section 19.
Are there particular cases that you're relying on for the separate amendment jurisprudence?
Yes, the separate amendment jurisprudence are cases like State versus Lippinger, Ripplinger, the library case in Seattle, Gottlieb versus Lister, and yes, those two. They're older cases, and also I rely upon the Arizona case that uses the exact same language. This is language that's familiar in constitutions throughout the state. The 2013 case from Arizona is probably the best discussion about interrelatedness and all the factors that go into whether or not something is in fact related, whether the provisions are related. And here, they're related and necessarily related in Proposition 1 because they concern the core group of sessions, concern the election and designation and size of the county council. All of those things are tightly related.
Well, no. The argument is that those changes are not at all related to the amendments concerning the Charter Review Board or Commission.
Now, the amendment concerning the Charter Review Board, you've got to remember what the objective of this body is, the Charter Review Commission, is to bring forth changes to improve the Charter. And they have, without limit, to make any amendments to any article or section of the Charter. They're not limited in how and
what they
can make.
Well, I know they're not limited, but the argument is that these amendments are not interrelated because the amendments to the commission itself are unrelated to the residents.
Sure, but what they're doing is amending the Charter, which was brought forward as a single measure itself in the first instance. So first, it's related because it's an amendatory law. And second, it's related, and second, it's not just simply being interrelated. It's also incidental subjects are allowed to be included, as well as those subjects that do not have any force of change in the law, things that would remain the same whether or not they're adopted or another, things like typographical corrections, corrections of the law, and so on. And all of those things were done. Remember, this is the first time that the Charter had been amended, and so there was some
what's your position about the changes to 8.31, 8.20, 8.40 that
sure
have been pointed to? Are those incidental?
The changes to 8.20 are changes that are useful minor technical corrections, and that's referred to in the text of the language. The change to 8.21 is also useful minor technical corrections necessary for the efficient administration law. Both of them deal with the Charter Review Commission.
Right.
This Charter Review Commission was formed. It doesn't change the basic formation of the commission. It just has to do with how some of the internal workings where they had problems with members who were not showing up at meetings and such, and how are they going to deal with that. So it doesn't even take effect until the next meeting of the Charter Review Commission in 2020. So there's quite a delay, and so it doesn't quite have even force of law. In Section 8.31, procedures, those are simple, helpful clarifications and allowed by Ferris versus Monroe. Ferris versus Monroe is the divorce and lotteries case where even though there's wording changes being made, the wording changes that do not have the force of law are allowed to be implemented without a change. We submit that there's no question that all of these changes are interrelated. They can be also put forward together at the same time out of just matters of efficiency. In Ripplinger, they talked about, well, it's possible that all of these measures could have been broken up section by section, and we could have had a dozen or more items on the ballot at the same time. But as a matter of efficiency, that's not necessary. It's not required, and the courts haven't required it since the Ripplinger case.
All right, since time is short, turn
sure.
to the second question, which is the challenge to RCW 3632, 020, and 040. I know you're taking the position we're a home rule charter county, therefore there's no need to address whether those statutes are constitutional. But in the text of the complete text of the amendments to the home rule charter, those statutes are not only cited, but they're relied on for purposes of creating these residency districts. So, therefore, because San Juan relied on those statutes and relied on what those statutes allowed, why would we not address the challenge to those statutes?
Yeah. The statutes provide what I call dual authority. Twinning authority. They're belts and suspenders. They both do the same thing. And when you become a home rule charter, you look to Article 11, Section 4 for your power.
Well, that may be, but then why are you citing them? If you're citing and relying on them, obviously not just relying on your home rule charter authority.
And it's because it's parallel. It's giving the charter review members confidence that they're acting in accordance with that state law. It doesn't say pursuant to. It says in accordance with. And so in other places, the first charter freeholders just put the statute by reference so as to help any future reader to say...
Well, it says as authorized by.
As authorized by.
It does not say in accord with.
And even so, the two provisions are parallel. Okay? So the equal protection analysis, if you need to get over them for both purposes, the county feels that's fine. The state believes that it's simply Article 11, Section 4. And there's no question that we meet the equal protection standards. There's not one section that they've mentioned yet that any way impairs the right to vote.
A question that everybody who came down here for the argument I'm sure knows the answer to, but isn't entirely clear to me from the briefing. Where you ended up with the three county council districts, is that where you started when there was three commissioners?
Yes.
Before you had a charter government?
Yes. Yes, it was authorized by these statutes that were adopted years ago and in place even before that. Yes, we've always, this is what's familiar to everybody in San Juan County. We had an experiment for 6 years to use six other districts, and we returned to the position we were in before.
In terms of the people who actually live in the houses up there, this was a question of let's keep what we're doing or let's go back to doing what we did before.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is that I don't think there can be any argument that 8.21 is purely an incidental change. They added language that the CRC shall fill the positions with the, this is dealing with what happens when a CRC member doesn't show up or resigns, that the CRC shall fill the position with the vote runner-up from the same district within 15 days, or the seat may be left vacant by a majority vote of the CRC. That is not, that completely changes the dynamic of the CRC. If you have attrition, then the majority gets more powerful because you don't fill it up with the runner-up, but they can decide, hey, we're not going to fill up this vacant seat. Moving back to the constitutional arguments, the federal trilogy saying that it's okay to have these residency.
Going back to not filling the, I can understand the purpose behind that because I've been in groups before where people quit in a huff when they didn't get their way. And sometimes when people quit in a huff, the group as a whole is close to the end of its project. So that's probably the purpose behind this. You're saying it had to be in a separate, the quit in the huff provision had to be separately voted on? Is that what you're arguing?
No, in former 8.21, if you quit in a huff, the second runner-up would be put into your shoes. With the change in 8.21 now, the CRC has the option, if there's a majority vote saying, hey, we don't want to fill that, they can vote and say, we're not going to fill that seat and we're just going to conduct business with one fewer member. Now, that is a substantive change. It's not just an incidental change. It changes the dynamic. It changes the voting structure of the CRC.
It's substantive and had to be voted on separately. That's the thrust of what you're saying?
Well, it had to be voted on separately, or the ballot title must have specified that and given voters warning that this was a potential, this law was going to be potentially changed. The ballot title only put the voter on notice that we're talking about the council members, not the CRC. So what we're saying is this provision was log rolled in, and a voter who is reading the ballot title would not be put on notice that the dynamics of the CRC were going to be changed with the passage of Proposition 1. Going back, using my remaining 1 minute, the interesting thing about the vote result is that the Lopez district, which voted 80% for Proposition 1, is the smallest now residency district, and it has obviously the most to gain. Now, the federal trilogy relied on this notion that countywide voting somehow sanitizes the residency district, being from a residency district, because they are beholden to voters outside the county. But just looking at the landslide, you would have to divorce yourself from reality to say that the rationale in those federal cases still holds. And so that is why we think that 3632020, the provisions about whole island counties, is unconstitutional, especially in the state of Washington, which guarantees voters wider and more rights than the federal constitution. Thank you.
Thank you.